Is all software going to fall apart because AI is going to hack its way through it? We have Anthropic with its next frontier model, Mythos, being done. What is it? It's being halted for 100 days and only being given to the top 40 companies through Project Glasswing so they can patch all of the zero-day vulnerabilities the AI has found. Brett, Anthropic has played the fear card, I would say, for marketing before. Is this similar vein of, you know, scare people and that's great marketing? Is this them actually being cautious and doing the right thing? Is it both? What's your read here?
Well, let's just lay out like the trajectory of where Mythos lies on kind of expectations of the landscape. Mythos is extremely, at least on their not verifiable, because they're not releasing it to the public, reported benchmark results, Mythos is materially better at software engineering type skills. And in fact, if you look at our expectations for performance, it's basically moving forward what we would have anticipated would only be available a year from now to today. But it's not moving forward to today because they're going to not release it for 100 days. And so it's moving it forward by two-thirds of a year. You can interpret it as them being, hey, we're being very responsible here. We're projecting kind of like we have this very powerful tool, but we're making sure it's being staged responsibly. Or you could interpret it as we have this very powerful tool that we don't have the compute resources to let kind of the average user use at a price point that the average user will bear. And so then therefore we're going to announce that it's remarkably astounding at doing stuff as a way to induce enterprises to pay up to get access early to paper over some of their technical shortcomings and their underlying code. And I think that's probably a more reasonable interpretation of what's happening, given that since they made this announcement, people have shown that a number of the exploits that Mythos detected can also be detected by GPT 5.4. And, you know, so it's not, it's an extraordinarily powerful tool, don't get me wrong. And, you know, back when GPT-2 was first announced, Dario, now CEO of OpenAI of Anthropic, but then head of research for OpenAI, was like, we can't release this to the world until we, you know, figure out what's going on here. And that was GPT-2. And so it's a common kind of marketing tactic of these AI companies to be like, this is too powerful for you. And so then therefore we're going to feed it to select customers and induce, you know, a desire amongst people to get access to it as a byproduct of that marketing strategy.
I do think it's a great way to get enterprise lock-in. What better way than to go to your enterprise and say, hey, we hacked you. And the only way you can fix it is to pay and, you know, spend millions of dollars, become one of the thousand of our customers to spend $1 million to use our tool to fix it.
Yeah. And I mean, to be honest, where does that leave not the top 50 enterprises, but, you know, number 51 through 1,000 who all have bits of code out there that could potentially be exploited? So in some ways it's kind of, you know, I just don't know that there's, other than kind of like the marketing and sales staging and the fact that they are starved for compute, that this is a true safety thing. I think it's a marketing thing.
Wait, they're starved for compute. I agree. Everyone's starved for compute. People are already surge pricing this. AI models are only going to get better. Demand's going to go up. How did this get so much better with it still being compute constrained? Like, are they not constrained on the training side? And so they can still throw more at it. It's like, you would think at a certain point, the time it takes to build new data centers and bring all of the training supply compute online would cause some slowdown. Have we just not hit that point yet?
No, I think every company is having to make opportunity cost calculations. And so Anthropic and OpenAI had, you know, they're investing some money. For Anthropic, it's either invest in training or invest in servicing enterprise customers. And that's what they're balancing off. And so this is a sufficiently large model that the training investment they did probably presuppose this commercialization ramp they've had. So, you know, they might have done the bulk of the compute devotion to this model, you know, have finished it by early in this year, and then they were doing other stuff on the back end to safety analyze it before getting to the stage where they're going to begin to stage release it. Rumor is that OpenAI has a model that they've been working on for 2 years that's similarly performant that they're going to announce and release to everybody when they do, because they have more abundant compute right now than Anthropic. But OpenAI has another kind of weighing off prioritization. They have a third bucket of desire amongst their portfolio. There's compute training, there's the enterprise business, and then there's the consumer business, which Anthropic has, you know, glided past. And that's, you know, the consumer business is not materially monetizing for OpenAI right now, but it is a way they're differentiated from Anthropic. And I think you have to understand all of these choices within the context of the companies are lining themselves up to try to get to the public markets and, you know, maximize the valuation they can raise at that public market entry point to maximize their, you know, basically capital they have to deploy against future compute. So it's like a, I would say, complex set of allocation decisions these companies are having to make, including on the public side. You know, Microsoft disappointed on its Azure results because it was withholding compute from Azure for their own internal use. And, you know, I think Meta just, and Nick, I'm going to turn to you. So Meta just released a frontier type capable model that they've trained with their super intelligence lab. And people have complained about Meta because they're not selling this compute to others. They're having to reserve it for themselves. Where do you think Meta feeds into this picture, given distribution, everybody else operating in enterprise?
Distribution. I mean, I think Meta, to your point, right, they don't have to serve compute to others. They don't have a cloud business. They need to stand up. So the opportunity cost to be able to deliver a consumer experience here with their advertising business, so they don't have to directly monetize this to start, makes them, I think, a formidable opponent to others like ChatGPT and Claude and Google Gemini. So, you know, I think this.
Well, I'd say there's no overlap.
If you look at the App Store,
like Anthropic,
Claude is still
materially going after the consumer
up there
business,
in terms of, you know, it's right behind Chat. I was just looking, it's right behind ChatGPT. So, from a consumer standpoint, it is catching on. And I think this goes back to something we've talked about internally where, you know, these tools are so ubiquitous in your work life and your daily life. Is it possible that the one you use for work then becomes the one you use personally? Like, is there a counterbalance to the way that you use these for work and for personal that makes it such that you don't choose one versus the other? You end up using one for both, which may be possible. I think, like, maybe that's what's happening with Claude. People use it at work. They see how powerful this is, and they're like, why am I using ChatGPT personally at this point?
Yeah.
Well, maybe
go ahead. Go on, Sam. No, please.
I was going to ask. So, you know, Ben Thompson, this is the concluding paragraph from his piece on this, which I think is the ultimate question here, which is, you know, on aggregation theory. But the question is, you know, do you win by having the better product, or is getting the better product a function of compute? And so it's supply. And you need to have the supply to get the better product to then get the people. And so the real, is it demand or supply that's going to drive?
I think it depends on the time frame.
Real differentiation,
right?
Here.
Like, this is happening so fast. If you went back 6 months ago, OpenAI running away, then you had Gemini come on, then you had Claude and Anthropic. Now Meta is starting to get more involved. We know Elon's still out there with XAI. So I do think it's time frame. I think this is still very, very early. And I go back to on the aggregation side. If you think about product versus compute, I think product ultimately wins because assuming that you can get the compute to build the backend model or get access to the capability that the model provides, wrapping the product is what ultimately matters. Like, co-work is not model capability as much as it is an interesting product fit for the enterprise. And I think that same thing will be true in consumer landscape. And I think distribution wins. I've been saying this for years and years, or many years as this has been going on. Because if you think about...
Hey, you look at comments from last week, people say, yeah, how many years has Nick been...
Look, I'm growing out my
Nick's
beard.
Nick's older than you think.
of my childish looks. I think distribution matters. I think it will. Because what is Mark Zuckerberg? Is he an innovator? Not necessarily. Like, he is great as an operator, and he's one of the best scaler and hyperscalers of all time, right? Like, the products that have come out of Meta over the last 10 years aren't coming out of Meta. They're coming from other companies, right?
Snap.
Wait, are you just dismissing all of like Reality Labs and kind of the,
Snap was also first to the
Horizon
World?
Well, I know, but I've
acquired Oculus, right? So they're not innovating in the same way that you could point to other companies. And innovation is kind of on a scale anyway. But I think, like, when you look at what's happening in AI land, I think is if you have the distribution, if you can maintain that, you can then go out and copy whatever the best product and solution is until there is true lock-in value. And I would argue that on the enterprise side, with what Claude is doing in Cowork, there is more lock-in value than I've ever felt personally using an AI product. On the consumer side, I think there's absolutely no lock-in value. I think Meta can still run away with it. I know this is going to get a chuckle out of Brett. I think Apple can get, I can get back in the race. Apple. And I don't think until you have lock-in value, you can say who has won or no.
What that ignores, a couple of things I'd interject. One is the ability to create, yes, the application layer is kind of like the key, or product. Ultimately, to create sticky users, you have to have product in some way, you know, and the supply gives you the recipe that you need in order to build that application layer. And that's the question. Like, if you look at the publicly reported numbers on what both Anthropic and OpenAI have invested in training and their future compute that they've reserved to serve both their products and additional R&D, OpenAI is actually much better positioned in terms of medium-term access to compute supply, and is investing a lot more money this year, or a lot more, you know, again, public reporting in the underlying training of their models. Now, you would read that broadly. So training, you know, and actually we don't know for sure it's training, but the amount of compute they're devoting to kind of developing kind of additional product, call it. And so the, yes, Anthropic came out with Mythos. OpenAI's Spud model is essentially going to be released and going to be performance competitive. Both of those models are likely, Mythos, at least on the reported data, and likely OpenAI's, are going to make Meta's release here look like it's about a year behind. And having access to those models means you can kind of like build stuff on top of them. And I think that's what it's like, is the consumer experience in ChatGPT right now extraordinarily sticky? No, it is moderately sticky, as in it's a huge pain for me. Like, I cross compare responses in ChatGPT to other models sometimes and cross compare particular features, but ChatGPT remains my default because it knows the age of my kids. It knows the books they're reading. It knows like the health circumstances of my wife's family. It has stuff in context that are basically threads that it's useful to return back to. So I don't have to re-inject that context. Now I could go through and be like, I'm going to systematically try to strip out the context of all these individual threads and port it over.
Still.
Yeah,
that's you could. That's what everyone's afraid
you
of.
You could, but I'm saying I let me just finish my point, which is that it's clearly not sticky to the same degree that at least Claude Cowork has suddenly become sticky in enterprise. It's clearly not sticky. And Codex, frankly, for me, is very sticky. I would wager that there is going to be a point that's crossed, and it may be like an explicit point where you look at it and you say, yes, that's the thing. And or it may be an accrual and the aggregation of things connected together where suddenly it becomes quite difficult to switch. Not impossible, but for the consumer perspective, where switching is actually much less likely to occur than in the enterprise perspective, it's enough that it kind of like secures a set of users. But I agree we're not kind of like at that point yet. And I think the ability to deliver that product is contingent upon having a volume of users that's using it, so you can see the shape of what it's being used for, and then kind of like doing smart experimentation of this is how we're going to make this better for this big collection of users in some way, to try to create kind of like apps that are built on top. And you could say like health is an app that OpenAI has tried to do, where they know that's a big volume of queries. Can they like actually make the context auto ingested by the app such that it becomes sticky?
I would love
in the
to see
context.
What it,
and,
you know,
and
what
I don't know
use cases
work, but it's definitely
and if use take. Cases have changed on the consumer side from 3 years ago to today, despite like all of the performance improvement of these models. My guess is the consumer use case looks very much the same as it did three years ago for the broad base. Whereas on the enterprise side, I agree with you, Brett, like you as a worker are actually incentivized to continue to figure out how to use these models in unique and interesting ways, because it, you know, lightens your workload. On the consumer side, like you're not really thinking about it in that same light. So you're just continuing to use it in the same way, unless you're being shown how to use it for different use cases.
Yeah. Well, it's like I onboarded my mom onto ChatGPT because her water heater needed fixing, you know, and it's like, is she going to call a service professional or is she just going to like click the pilot light to turn
this.
It back on? Like the pilot light had gone out.
I tried to do this with
and
my
so
toilet and I
taught her
voice
mode and it worked.
So me and Gemini are in a bit of a tiff right now. Yeah.
that's funny you say model.
Gemini too. I was just gonna say, it's like everything's moving. It's like Anthropic one came out of nowhere, now they're growing, and Frank brought this up, which is a great point. It's like you look at OpenAI and Anthropic's revenue growth rate compared to the three largest pure SaaS companies in the world, and you're like, these are the, it's like I looked at it as like, these are the largest pure SaaS companies in the world because the revenue is so abysmal relative to a $30 billion run rate. And right, it's like, you know, if we look back at episode, I don't know, 180 to 100 of this, we were talking about Gemini because they just, you know, leapfrogged and everyone was talking about it. So, oh, this is amazing. And then Anthropic comes out of nowhere. It's like the ground is still very fertile.
Actually, and this is, yes. And I think that in some ways, at least on the enterprise side, it is self-stabilizing to some degree. Nick, you say like Claude Cowork is clearly sticky,
right?
And
right.
yet it's not available in the volume that people want to use it. And so then that causes, becomes unavailable. And it's like, well, I need to try this other tool because I still need to do the thing. And so their lack of compute supply creates basically a permission structure for people to use other tools. And I think that there is an interpretation of the way the market is moving, which is kind of these frontier models on the enterprise side are going to be competitive, at least on a benchmark basis. And so then kind of the share will go back to the amount of compute supply they have. Because if you sign too many customers, then you're going to piss off your customers and they'll go somewhere else. And so they're in some ways, you know, lining up revenue now just to try to secure future supply, because that's going to determine roughly kind of like the market share that they have. But pricing will be, because there's so much surplus in the pricing, you know, they'll hold each other in check to some degree across pricing, but it'll be a relatively small set of players. So they'll be able to extract good margins off the system at basically market share of the compute supply they have.
Okay, Brett, in 1 minute, I want to timestamp this, because we discussed this last week and then I saw someone tweet it and then Gary Tan said, hey, this is a good idea. So we need to establish your stake in the ground here. And the tweet is Moltbook, but there's private group chats between you and your friends clause. So
yeah, the new social network.
Yes.
Social networks have been degraded because they've gone to the algorithmic feed, and basically the value of being a friend to somebody has been totally adulterated by the fact nobody has 5,000 friends, but people follow 5,000 people. And now more than ever, it's important that you know who your friends really are. Who do you really trust? Because it's not just you interacting with them. It's going to be your AI agents interacting with their AI agents and in conducting transactions. And an AI agent that's exposed to the whole world will get like arm twisted by some guy into giving away all of your money. So you need a new social network that's basically built on kind of just the trust relationships you establish with other parties, that you're trusting your agents to interact, to transact with their agents. And then some people will have very large followings, but they'll have to have a very high security budget to protect their agent interfaces against the, you know, wide
it's in the
world
naming.
Of we aggressive went from
social
AI
networking to social media. There's largely no money in social networking. There's a ton of money in social media. Look at Snap, look at Meta. One's a social network, one's a social media.
Yeah.
Snap is Wait, significantly more social networking, where
obviously,
you know, you're sending chats, you're sending snaps, and they have a media tab.
No, this is
Instagram is very
Snap is a camera
media.
Company. Haven't like, you been following this since the IPO?
Maybe one out of 10 is on, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're not talking about social media anymore. We're talking about with society productivity.
Mm.
The next level.
No.
Trust network.
I think we're talking about trust network.
Maybe.
We'll figure it out.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So friend us on future social network. Have your agents talk to my agents. And we'll see
to
everyone
be named later.
Next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.